Thank you very much, Ben. Thank you very much for coming. So I will talk about recent progress that I made on this topic. And first, I would like to start with a little bit of motivation. And I don't want to spend too much time on that because you know you can get carried away very far. So the motivation goes threefold. So first, it's been a lot of progress in enumerative algebraic geometry recently, in particular in quantum K-theory and quantum cohomology. So what will be relevant for my talk is quantum K-theory of symplectic resolutions, or in particular Nakajima-Kuo varieties. On the mathematical side of things, on physical side of things. So when I was at Perimeter, so I worked with some of you guys, and then with David, that wrote a paper several years ago. It did several things, but among them was the so-called quantum classical duality. Which is, so I'll talk about this in more detail, but in a nutshell, it's a correspondence between two types of integrable systems. So in fact, two families of integrable systems. What will be relevant for us today is the XXZ spin chain and the trigonometric, and then there are two names, Roy Z and Rs. Schneider model. So the former is quantum spin chain, the latter is a classical many body system. And what we found with that in methods of type 2B string theory is that there is a one to one correspondence between beta and Zatz equations of the XXZ spin chain and the energy level equations of the TRS model. So I'm going to abbreviate it as TRS. Okay, and then the third part of the motivation is the, well, as always, right, it's a, well, basically I can just write geometric line bonds. I'm not gonna talk about this too much, I'm just gonna put it here in a list. So basically, in some sense, you can view this quantum classical duality as a part of Langlands. So in my story today, we need to try to decode the title, right? So the opers with the Q, there are a bunch of Qs in the title, right? So we'll get all of them. But essentially, there's a triality between these topics, right? The opers, QK systems, and beta and Zatz equations. So XXZ, so that's the beta side, or the automorphic or A side of geometric Langlands. And then the TRS model will be generalized to Q opers. I'll explain how, right? And this will be the B side or Galois side of geometric Langlands. And then we'll make a concrete statement about a correspondence between the space of Q opers and solutions of QK systems in the presence of some non-degeneracy conditions. Okay, so let me elaborate a little bit on part two, on the second bullet point. So the XXZ chain arises when you study quantum K theory. So in other words, you're integrating over some modulized space of quasi-maps from base curve P1 to some Nakajima-Kuo variety. So for example, let me take as an example the cotangent bundle to the flag variety in CN. So this is a, I assume most of you are familiar with what this is. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, especially when the opers, yeah, so in sense, the the story of operas goes beyond the realm of geometry of quiver varieties, right? So when you study quiver varieties, you have certain inequalities on ranks of those bundles that appear here. But like in the opera world, you can ignore them, and basically, what I mean is that if you have, say, Grassmannian or cotangent bundle to the Grassmannian of k hyperplanes in Cn, you better have k less or equal than n, right? Otherwise, it's an empty space, at least if you understand it in the most naive sense. But the analog of the opera would actually be able to go beyond that. So you could have, opera is an object which, when k is less or equal than n, would boil down to that Grassmannian, or rather to k theory of that Grassmannian. But anyhow, so let me not go. Let me just say, you can wait a little bit longer for that. So yeah, so you study the moduli space of those quasi-maps. You have the equivariant action of the maximal torus on the base curve here. And in the on the target side, we have several parameters which will be important in the story. So you have equivariant parameters on the global symmetry, and then you have Kähler parameters for every node of the quiver. And additionally, you have the this parameter h bar, which acts on the cotangent fiber by iterations, right? So it would just multiply the coordinates by this number. So almost every letter that I write takes values in C star, unless otherwise specified. So there is some multiplicative complex numbers. Okay, and then you do the computation, you do some covariant integration of this moduli space of quasi maps, and then you compute the vertex function or the quantum K theory class, classes rather. So a K theory is an algebra, in fact, right? So it's an algebra with it's a unital algebra. Right, maybe I should start with this. So after you've done, basically you can show that what's the K theory of the space, if it's an N flag, you can write it as using generators and relations. Like, yeah, this way it's the statement of the correspondence is most clean. So for every vertex of the, for every node on the quiver, there is a family of beta roots, right, or churn roots, right? This algebra is the following quotient. It's a polynomial algebra of those churn roots. So S1, like they go with, there are as many of them at each node as the rank, right? And then it depends on all the equivariant parameters. Well, you always need to get plus minus one, right? And then it depends on h bar, and it depends on Kähler parameters, right? And then you mod out by relations, which are the beta and that's equations for this quiver variety. Yeah, I'm not going to write them explicitly here, so I think most of you have seen them before. So that's one of the ways to prove it. So the proof goes like this. So you compute the vertex function, and then it's as this k theoretic push forward, and then you show that in the limit when q goes to one, when this the action on the base curve becomes trivial, the this vertex develops a saddle point. So you have it's equal to W divided by log Q, right? And then the W, which is also called the Young-Young function, for each quiver variety, is used in order to calculate those beta equations. In fact, those beta equations are nothing but the Jacobian ring of this Young-Young function, right? So basically, there is a multivalued function of all churn roots on all covariant parameters, which you can consistently compute. And the relations in this ring come from the minima or extrema of this function. Okay, so these are beta equations, beta equation for the XXZ chain. That's the XXZ part of the story, the quantum part. And then the classical part comes in the following description. So, okay, what you can also prove, and we did it with my math colleagues. We did a paper with Pushkar, Smirnov, and Zaitlin, also several years ago, where we have shown that, and then the calculation was new, but the ideas again were borrowed from the time when I was at Perimeter, or at least some of them. So you cannot rewrite the same space as a different quotient. So it's a polynomial algebra over. Instead, basically, we're getting rid of those beta roots, right? So if you have a complete flag variety, there are n times n minus 1 over 2 of them. So there's a bunch of variables. But what is relevant for the computation are only the while invariant combinations of those roots. So in particular, on every vertex, you don't need to know the beta equations are complicated polynomial equations. Nobody knows how to solve them. And the point is that you don't need to, right? So if you pick a proper basis, you'll be able to find a better, more appropriate description. So now here's the answer. So you keep those equivalent parameters, right? They don't go anywhere. And then instead of beta roots, you replace them with certain variables which I call p1 through pn. And then you divide this by the TRS energy equations. And there are, for a complete, the T star of n flag, there are exactly n of them, as opposed to n squared, right? Roughly n squared. N minus one halves. So in terms of those beta roots, geometrically those variables, right? They give you the following. So as a they're actually K theory classes, right? And as a K theory class, they correspond to PI correspond to multiplication by this bundle. So it's the top. It's like this. It's lambda I. Vi, so say Vi is the tautological bundle on the ith node, and then you would do it something like that, right? So in terms of churn roots, beta roots, it would look like Si1 and so on, Sii divided by Si-1, Si-1, right? So you can see that it's the manifestly permutation invariant, right? And this new basis allows us to understand this algebra more explicitly. So the calculations become more manageable. Right. So that's the TRS part of the correspondence. And sort of maybe one last comment about this is that the understanding of why this should be the case can be easily inferred from string theory. So if you use the Hanani-Witten description of brains, you're using brains like there's a brain description of some quiver gauge theory. So the one that I drew on the slide, one that I get over here, right? So this it's T star of F4, right? So this picture gives you this quiver, right? It's 1, 2, 3, 4. And then, in this brain, there's some rules that those brains obey as you move them around. So you can actually So you can actually transform that to make kind of, you can move all the NS5 brains to the left and move all the D5 brains to the right. And then you would have something like this. So it's like there's a single brain ending on each one, like that, right? So what happens is that we treat this as the left boundary condition of gauge theory that lives on these brains, and this you treat as the right boundary condition. So that they're mutually BPS. And then the calculation that you need to do is you need to study the moduli space of vacuo of this theory subject to those boundary conditions. And that basically on the nose gives you this TRS energy level equation. So in other words, the classical side is the 4D theory on, so 4D and equals 2-star super young males. Well, not young, yeah, it's equals 2-star theory, right, on R2 across the circle. That's what makes it K-theoretic, times the interval with in the presence of a 2 BPS boundary conditions. One is called generalized Neumann, one is some Dirichlet. The quantum side gives you the n equals 2-star. Well, they're different 2-stars, right? Because it's in 3 dimensions on R2 process 1. And then basically the dictionary works as follows, that this AR parameter here, which is the quantum Planck constant in the spin chain, here corresponds to the coupling constant of the TRS model. So let me write you one formula for the TRS Hamiltonian. So if there are two, if you have two bodies, so it's the one canonical degree of freedom, then the first Hamiltonian looks like this. It's let me relabel this. Zeta 1 minus h bar zeta 2, zeta 1 minus zeta 2. I'll explain what zeta is in a second. P1 plus zeta 2 minus h bar zeta 1, zeta 2 minus zeta 1, P2. So that corresponds to that the relationship describes the quantum K theory of cotangent bundle to the CP1. And then in these relations, the Kähler parameter Z is the ratio, right? And then if you have equivalent parameters A1 and A2, then the relations look like this. H1 is equal to A1 plus A2. And second relation is P1 times P2 is equal to A1 multiplied by A2. So K theory of that.
People keep asking me, so I'm trying to pick a favorite animal.
Guys, I'm sorry. I said K theory. My phone said thought it's Siri, and it was on. So that thing is equal to so basically C of those zetas, zeta one, zeta two, A1, A2, h bar, P1, and P2, divided by these equations. Good. Any questions? So this is an old story, just, yes, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very ignorant about this stuff. What's the significance of the change from 3D to 4D?
It's never actually 4D, so this interval is short. So mm-hmm. So you start off with just studying this theory in infinite, in R4, or R3 crosses 1, right? And then, mm-hmm. There's a result by Donaghy-Witten that relates, exactly Donaghy-Witten, but anyhow, so you can study the moduli space of vacua, which is parameterized by the vacuum expectation values of line operators that wrap that circle. Mm-hmm. So that leads you to the character variety of one puncture torus, which is essentially the Kolodziej-Morozov space, related to Kolodziej-Morozov space. Only here you're doing it in a different complex structure. Instead of I, you're doing the complex structure J, and instead of elliptic algebra, you actually get trigonometric Roisin-Harris model. Now, the So that would give you, that's the story in infinite space. Now, if you put it on a small interval, then you need to specify boundary conditions, well, based on like where those brains end, right? And like there are even two frames, right? So for example, we can specify the value of the gauge field scalars to some values, and those background fields would actually give you the equivariant parameters of the following K theory. So kind of brain thinks like go to 4D allows you actually to understand where this change of variables comes from.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a different interpretation of this geometric data here. Right. So in paper with David, they have very explicit formula and sort of interpretation of what this TRS moment actually means from the point of view of the boundary conditions. So like I said, there are two stories. There's a kind of the magnetic side and the electric side. So like on the electric side, you specify sort of these boundary conditions. On the magnetic side, you specify those boundary conditions. Yeah. But even if you don't know all that, it's possible to just develop the formalism of how to rewrite these equations in terms of the beta equations, and that's what OPERS will enable us to do. Other questions? Okay, so now I want to switch gears a little bit, because as I gave this talk several times, and whenever I go to easy kind of material OPERS, I don't have time to get to the fun stuff. So keep this in mind, and then I'm going to switch gears a little. So we're going to go a little bit more formal. Okay, so now I want to talk about, the full formalism. So let G be a simply connected Lie group. So we'll develop the story of Q-OPERS for any group G, right? Not necessarily SLN. So for SLN, we'll be able to do a lot of more explicit computations, but the theorems that we have proven, they work for any. So it's simply connected. The group. Now I'm going to give a series of definitions, and then every following definition will add something new to what was done before. So first I'm going to define Q connection on CP1. Right, so it's the following data. It's first we give principal G bundle FG on P1. They have this map MQ from P1 to itself, which takes in sublocal trivialization Z times Z to the QZ. So Q is a non-zero complex number. And then let's say FQ is the pullback of this bundle under this map. Now we define a meromorphic GQ connection. On P1. So it's a section, we'll call it A. So it's a section of this sheaf, right? So it's a home from FG to FQG. And U here says O of U, where U is the some Zariski open subset of P1. Okay. And then sort of the under the local change of coordinates or change of trivialization, yes, we can think of A as just some linear operator from F to FQ, right? So A of Z changes as follows, right? So it goes under, so that's the Q gauge transformation. A of Z goes to G of QZ, A of Z, G of Z inverse. And it's the Q analog of the standard gauge transformation. Now, using the connection, let's define the oper. So there's a GQ oper on P1, and that's the following set of data. So it's a triple bundle, connection, and a sub-bundle with a reduction to a Borel subgroup B minus, right? And then the oper condition right, works like this. So you take the so let's denote set I sub U. It's U intersection with the inverse of MQ over U, right? So it's just a subformality. And then the restriction of A, right? So A goes from FG to FGQ, so restriction to the set IU takes values in the following object in following space, so it's B minus of C of IU times coxeter element of G times B minus of C of IU. Right, so it's a coxeter element, and at this point we do not fix the order of simple reflections in the coxeter element. So pick your favorite, right? If you say, you know, if you're in AM, pick just from S1 and so on to SN minus one. But we're not going to fix it for now. And in fact, most of the important statements in what I'm going to tell you will not depend on the choice of the coxeter element. Okay.
Great. I'm a little bit confused about this point. So, when I say takes values somewhere, then, I mean, in principle, this is not, I mean, this A, it's not an element of G, right? It's an element of, it's home from,
that's right. Know,
mm-hmm. One, something. So I'm a little bit confused about what this means, but, I mean, what it means for it to be, okay, so you're saying that you have a map between two bundles for the B structure, and then it makes sense to say that it lies in a particular Bruassel.
That's right. Okay, that's not the way to say it. It's a certain Bruassel that I'm specifying.
I mean, if you have in two G torsors with the B structure. Yeah, okay, so I see it. If you have a map between two G torsors with the B structure, then it makes sense to say that this map lies in a particular Bruassel. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So in fact, I'll comment about G torsors when I talk about mu ropers on the next slide. Yeah. So right, and then let me write down the explicit formula. So locally, it would look like this. So it's A of U, it's some function n A of Z n minus of Z times product. So yeah. So if the C is the product of simple reflections, again in some order. Some function phi I of z, so alpha I check is the simple coroute, right? So we have the Chevalier description of the root system, right? So we have ei, fi, and alpha I check. I goes from 1 to r, right? So let me continue the formula. That multiplies s I. Times n of z. So here, n of z, they live in n prime. They live in n of u. And n of z, where n is the, it's b mod h, n minus. Right, so that's what that's what it means. So you can actually write the formula for it like that. Okay. Right. So that's just oper. So oper is specified by the triple three parts of three ingredients: bundle, connection, and the subbundle, which is reduced with the Borel, with the certain Borel reduction. Now, not enough for us. We need to define the. We need to add one more barrel reduction. So that's where the Miura GQ offers come in. Also, everything is on P1. So and now this is a quadruple, right? So it's a bundle connection, and then there's FB minus and FB plus. Reduction with opposite barrel. So in a nutshell, Miura offer is a offer where there's a second sub bundle which is preserved with this reduction which is preserved by the connection. Right? So connection is a map from F to FU, and it's preserved by that map. But more specifically, so such that the triple FGA and FB minus, this is the Q-oper, GQ-oper, C above, right? And then, yes, FB plus preserved by A. So as Sasha was commenting, so let's pick a point X, right? And then consider the fiber, right? So FG at X, so this is it's a G torsor with two reductions. So it's FB minus comma X and FB plus comma X. And then of course, all of sort of, this is, there's a canonical isomorphism to G. And then, under this isomorphism, you can say that FB minus will become some element A times B minus, and this becomes some element B times B plus, right? And you can specify the Miura condition like this, that the element A inverse dot B, which lies in this double quotient G mod B minus on the left mod B plus on the right, which is the same as the wild group of G. So if you divide it like this, then this element will be in the wild group, and then we impose here the condition that which is called generic relative condition so at point X. Right, so that if this A minus times A inverse times B actually lives inside some open subset inside B minus times B plus, right? Or in other words, as an element of the wild group, it's equal to one, right? So it's actually the, yeah. Or in other words, A inverse times B belongs to the largest Bourras cell. So this condition is much more explicit for AN, but I want to talk about this toward the end. Okay, so that's Miura oper. Now with this Miura oper, so we can write some explicit formula for them. We have proven two structure theorems. So theorem one is that for any Miura oper. Such that this Borel reductions are in generic relative position. For any X inside V, which is some subset open subset of open subset of Q1. So in other words, it is possible to make those two reductions in a generic position, and then so in other words, locally. So if the G of QZ, if this belongs to B plus of Z, then the gauge transformation, this element G of Z, belongs to B plus times N minus. So it is always possible to make the upper lie in the B plus in the positive Borel by using the gauge transformation from here. And second theorem is that we can add the formula for it, right? So that A of Z is equal to it belongs to N of U of Z, N of Z times product phi I of Z S I alpha I check times N minus of Z intersected with B plus. And then second, that any element from here, from this space, from this big space, you can write it as a product, some rational function gi of z of I check exponential and then there's some coefficients ti, which you can later scale to one, like that. And so gi is it's a rational function. Very soon we'll be able to write down the formula for it. Yeah, so all uppers will look like that, right? So EIs are positive roots, right? And these are cartons. So every element from the space can be presented in this form. Okay. So we need any questions? Good. So we need to add two more ingredients to the definition. Namely, first is we need to describe singularities, right? So GQ uppers with regular singularities. So here we need to specify we need to say that phi i here is a polynomial, right? So let lambda I of Z be a polynomial in Z, and then that's what the upper look, that's how the upper looks like. It's some n prime from n minus product from I lambda I alpha I check Z times S I times N of Z, right? And then the corresponding mu upper will look like this. Again, so product, when I write the product, I keep the same order of simple reflections inside the Coxeter element. It would be lambda I over gi of z times ei. So those coefficients ti, you can scale to one. Okay. So singularities on P1 will be zeros of this polynomial, right? So roots of lambda are the singularities of the upper. And it's one set of data that the upper has. So the singularities if you go back to the beginning of the talk when I talk about queer varieties, they would correspond to equivariant parameters. then you can ask what corresponds to the twist parameters or to the Keller parameters. And that's where the Z-twisted condition comes in. So the fully addressed upper is Z-twisted. So Z-twisted GQ upper or Miura upper is the following beast. It's all the above plus the condition that it can be diagonalized, right? So take Z, a regular semi-simple element. Right, and then you demand that A of Z is equal to G of QZ times Z, G of Z inverse, where Z is just the product, again in the same order, little Z i's times alpha check, like that. Yeah. So this is the new part of data, right? So we have twist this the eigenvalues of this twist operator of this twist element. These are the Z i's, and the roots of lambda are the singularity, right? And then we also have parameter q, which is the which comes from this action on the CP1. So this is a set of data that should remind you the first 10 minutes of the talk when you have two sets of parameters, and then there was a parameter h bar. So roughly speaking, these new parameters, they play the same role. Okay. Good. So now, how do we calculate anything with it, right? It looks pretty abstract, so it would be kind of hard to write any explicit formula with this. And to understand how to do it, we need to introduce yet another upper, which we call Miura Lucker. So there's Miura Lucker. You can add Miura to any upper. So the uppers, and then there are Miura uppers. There's Miura Lucker GQ upper. So to understand what it does, we need to look at associated uppers corresponding to SL2 or yes, we need whiskey. We have we need to look at GL2 or rather SL2 SL2 subgroup of G. Right? You can think of your group G with some Dynkin diagram, right? And then you can sort of start kind of eating it up from some end. Say from here, you pick an SL2 subalgebra, so SL2 subgroup, and then you're trying to sort of see if you can write an upper, an SL2 upper just for that part, right? So, and if you know how to do it, you can try to do it for the next part, and then for the next part, and for the next part, and for the next part. And hopefully, in the end of the day, you'll be able to patch everything together, right? So, consider the take a VI is the irreducible representation of G. With the weight omega I. Right? Which is the highest weight vector. Little vi. And so there's this vector vi. And then you can act on it with a simple reflection. So you'll get a vector fi, not simple reflection, the negative root, so fi vi, like this. And this already gives you a two-dimensional subspace, right? Let's call it wi. The Miura-Plucker upper will be an SL2 upper associated with this two-dimensional subspace. So it is true that it's not the whole story, right? Because you can keep going further down, right? And it's, you add with more reflections, but you can actually single out the subspace here. So the idea would be to introduce as many Q uppers as the rank of the group, AI, and describe it like this. So there's some gauge transformation V, QZ. Yeah, so basically, yeah, so remember the Z, the twisted thing from here. So this is what, this is how we're going to play it. So we take the formula from above. I'm just going to relabel it from, well, too many Vs here. Sorry, but let's still call it G. Let me, I'm not going to use this V before, I'm just going to put script V like that. It's a little script, different form here. Okay. And that's the normal, that's the regular V. Okay. And then I restrict it to the, this two dimensional subset WI. Okay. So if you want to write it, if you remember the formula from above, like if you actually work out the algebra and do a simple computation, with the matrix exponential, right? There's only one term left. So that will give you the following matrix, this GI of Z, lambda I of Z, and then times the product of a J bigger than I, GJ of Z to the negative AJI. So AJI is the Cartan matrix of the OG. And here it's GI inverse times the product J not equal to I, GI of Z minus negative AGI. Okay? So that's what we call Mueller-Plucker-Cuoper associated to this space, right? And then as you can see from the construction, there are as many of them as rank. Now the theorem with, that I want to prove is that every Mueller-Plucker GQoper is also Mueller-Oper. So every so basically you can drop this Plucker thing from here. So we, in other words, sort of the main proof, the main calculation, which will show you that by studying this associated SO2 operas, we can actually describe the whole oper altogether. But first, basically, yeah, so I don't have that much time left, so let me announce two results, and then I'll see how much I can, I have time to explain. So there'll be two theorems. So first, I will show that every Mueller-Plucker oper is related to the set of solutions of the QQ system. And second theorem is that it's actually an embedding. So every Mueller-Plucker Cuoper is actually a Mueller Cuoper. And then it is not known till this day, it is not known for sure if this embedding is proper. So I know for sure that for SLN, these two are equal, but it is not known whether there's something else here which is not there for other groups G. And any questions at this point? Okay, so I do want to talk a little bit more about this SO2 oper because it will be an important part of the calculation later. So I'll try to be brief. So the actually maybe I can skip that part. One more useful tool is the so let's look at a very specific type of connection which is the Cartan connection. So we're only looking at the Cartan part of the oper. So the AH. So, and that will allow us to calculate this function G, right? So AH of Z is just the product of GI of Z to the alpha I check. And then we'll impose this Z twisted conditions so that so that you can diagonalize it, right? So reduce it to the diagonal form, and then you see that it's possible if it looks like this. So it's a product of some other function yi of qz to the alpha I check times z times yi of z to the negative alpha I check, where y is a polynomial, and then gi of z is equal to zi, it's the eigenvalues of z, yi of qz divided by yi of z. So that's how this this function little g, which appear in the definition of the Hopper, look like. Okay, and now we can let me write down this theorem here. So theorem. Well, I lost the numeration, so I'm gonna say theorem. So there is a one-to-one correspondence between set of Z-twisted Miura-Pluhar GQ Hoppers and the set of non-degenerate polynomial solutions of the QQ system. I'm going to write the equation for QQ system. So Xi Q minus I of Z Q plus I of QZ minus Xi Q minus I of QZ. So there's a, many of you can recognize the familiar structure of QQ system for G, right? So product G greater than I Q plus J of QZ to the negative AJI times product J less than I Q plus J of Z negative AJI. That's right. And here the, so you can see that like there's some data of the Dynkin diagram of G kind of, so AI, AJI, this is the, this is the Cartan matrix, and these parameters are Zi product J and I and Xi is Zi inverse product Zj minus Aji J less than I. Right? So the correspondence works like this, that the the Q plus, the polynomial of Q plus, which also known as Baxter polynomials, Q plus I of Z, I equal to Yi of Z. It's this function over here, which describes the Hopper. And then you can write down the gauge transformation V that diagonalized the Hopper looks like this. It's a product. I goes from 1 to R, yi of z to the alpha I check times product 1 to R exponential to the negative q minus I of z over q plus I of z yi, but that's not all. So there is some product of higher nested commutators in the Lie algebra, but they'll all be irrelevant for the two-dimensional subspace that we are considering. Yeah, so that's sort of, it's a kind of part of the dictionary. So let me say again. So what does the theorem say? It says that the fact that a Miura-Pluhar Hopper is Z-twisted, right? Meaning that there is a gauge transformation V, right? That brings it to a diagonal form is equivalent to the set of this QP system equations in the presence of some non-degenerate conditions. In the interest of time, let me skip that, but there's, you have to be very careful about non-degenerate conditions when you talk about. So in other words, there's a completely algebraic description of the space of these operas, of this Miller-Pulitzer operas. Okay, that's the first main theorem. And second main theorem is that the, as I announced, that every Miller-Pulitzer opera is also a Miller opera. How can we prove this? And I think that will be the last theorem that I prove today. So from Miura-Pulitzer to Miura. For that, I'm just going to write again what I just said, right? So that, so the space of Miura-Pulitzer GQ operas is a subset of Miura GQ op, right? It's a subset of Miura GQ op. And to prove it, we need to do the following. So we take let's recall what Backlund transformations are. Right, they are very explicit in this case. So we can take our opera Q connection and then make it to the following thing. So let's call it AI Z, and I'm going to twist it with the following operation. Mu sub I qz and now fi, right? So it's something from the opposite Borel, right? So Miura opera was, to specify Miura operas, you need to specify two Borel subalgebras, right, which are opposite to each other. And now I'm making a reflection. I'm going to the opposite Borel this way, like this, times a of z e to the minus mu I of z fi, where mu I is some rational function, which is product of j not equal to I q plus j negative a j I divided by q plus I q minus I. So it's a long calculation, but it's mostly linear algebra. So it's actually quite simple. But now let's see what it does. So if you do this, twist of the Q connection, what actually happens in the language of Q polynomials? So that results in Q plus J does not change for J not equal to I, but Q plus I becomes Q minus I. So it actually interchanges Q plus and Q minus. It does that flip or flop at this point, it interchanges Q plus and Q minus, and it takes the Z element, replaces by its simple reflection. And the QQ system becomes an equivalent QQ system where you would implement this change of variable. So now you can rewrite this QQ system again using this new set of functions, and you can show that this QQ system and the one before is equivalent to the actual bona fide Bayes-Ansatz equations in the presence of some non-degeneracy conditions. So certain non-degenerate non-degenerate QQ system, together with all these Backlund transformations on top of it, is one-to-one correspondence with the beta equations. It will take a long time to write the formula. You can look at this in the paper. Basically, it's the standard Bayes-Ansatz equation that you probably seen in a bunch of talks and or papers. Although there's a little asterisk here. These are standard beta equations for simplized groups. For non-simplized groups, equations that you get here, the QQ system for the simplized groups is the same as people studied before in quantum group literature. But for non-simplized, it's a bit different, and it's ongoing development of understanding them better what they actually are. And
so would it be right to say that we can associate the QQ system to any affine root system, and that the one which appears here is the following, that you take your original, I mean, you take your Lie algebra, fine dimensional Lie algebra, then you take the Kasparian affine Lie algebra, and then you take its Langle's dual, and you take the QQ system associated to that.
So I think it's... It's not just Langle. So Edgar Krenkel is writing a follow-up paper with, well, not follow-up, but he's working on this with Rishitikhin and with Hernandez. And well, I'm not sure how much I can tell, but basically in our paper, we make an announcement that it's not just LG, G to LG, there's some...
But that's not what I said. I said something different. I said that number one is that different QQ systems should be in one-to-one correspondence with different affine root systems, twisted or untwisted.
Different, and then... In the sense of background or in the sense of different root systems?
Different affine root systems.
Okay.
Affine Dynkin diagrams.
Okay.
Or affine linkers, which can be untwisted or twisted.
Yes.
And then that should be point number one. And number two should be the following, that the QQ system, which should be relevant here, would be the following. You take your original, like, finite dimensional root system, you make the corresponding untwisted affine algebra, and then you take Langle's dual of that, which is not the same as affinization of the Langle's dual. This is a different thing.
So if
your algebra is not simply laced, then Langle's dual of the corresponding affine one will be twisted Lie algebra, twisted affine Lie algebra.
Yeah, I'm aware of that fact. Yes.
So my expectation would be that the QQ system, that first of all, you can associate the QQ system to every affine Lie algebra, and now the one which should appear here should be the Langle's dual to the affinization of your affine dimensional one.
Like this.
Well, I mean, that should put parentheses somewhere. Yes.
Yeah, that's probably, it is probably the case, yeah. So like I said, Edward is looking into this right now, yeah. Good. Right, so then the, right, and then the, I should finish, right? So let me make maybe, oh yeah, so the final theorem, about non-degeneracy, right, is that let's take W0, which is the reduced decomposition of the maximal element in the wild group, right, so it's the maximal element. So what we're doing, so we can do backbone transformation once, say on one node, the quiver, if you like, but then you can do it over and over and over again, right? And then we need to require that at every step of this mutation, so you can use cluster terminology if you like, because there should be relations. Every time you do this mutation like this, you'll get an equivalent QQ system where you just interchange those Q pluses and Q minuses. And now imagine that you're doing it all the way down, right? So you would come from you will have completed all the mutations possible. Now, if during the process you never violated this non-degeneracy conditions, which simply means that there are no accidental cancellations between roots, like these are some polynomial equations here, and then if you have some coincident roots, then the degree of the equation drops and you have to deal with it. So ignoring those subtleties, the following statement is true. So this so-called W0 generic QQ system, and you can in fact think of them as a bunch of QQ systems, right? As a family of QQ systems, is equivalent to, well, the space of solutions of that QQ system is equivalent to the space of non-degenerate Z twisted Miura GQ over. Yeah, I guess Sasha is saying that if I want to call this guy, I should call it like this. But yeah, so maybe, yeah, probably this is the same. So we have QK system. So our QK system is given in this equation. So that non-degenerate QK system, space of solutions of that guy, is equivalent to the space of non-degenerate z-twisted operators that I had in the beginning. Okay, I don't want to take too much of your time. So I think I can stop here. And then if there are any follow-up questions, I can maybe comment more on applications, on what to do in SLM case or anything else. Okay, so thank you guys. Yeah, I think I stopped with the main part here.
So are there any questions?
I somehow have, maybe you can just repeat some of the main point I missed. Namely, this is the story about operators, Q operators, Miura Q operators, and so on. I mean, this is something I more or less understand. And then there are some, there's some connection to enumerative geometry. And so, and I kind of didn't really understand what that connection was.
Well, it was more of an equation. So the space of operators. Let's go back. So that's the enumerative motivation here, right? So you have this algebra, right? So it's a very explicit construction. And we understand this gadget in terms of this integrable system. Or in terms of weight equation, you pick it away. Now, what I'm saying is that the space of operators, like whichever direction you want to put them, Miura, blah, blah, the space of those operators generalizes the phase, like the notion of the phase space of this integrable system. So it's like the space of those Q operators is just some bigger space, like it's a larger family of spaces that for certain choice of data of the operator reduces to this. In fact, well, maybe I can give you an example. Probably a good point to start. So let's take SL2 oper, right? And then the so what is SL2 oper? You have a line subbundle of the rank 2 vector bundle, and then there's a short exact sequence. So L goes to W goes to W mod L, and then you require that the connection, the reduction of A onto this map is an isomorphism. So bundle is roughly isomorphic to this factor. So if bundle L is generated by vector S, which is, I'm going to use the QQ notation, which has components Q minus of Z and Q plus of Z, right? Then you can write this upper condition, this upper condition, which would look something like S of QZ wedge this Z S of Z is equal to lambda. So lambda contains singularities. And then if you write it under, so this is the determinant, if you write it as a QQ system, you'll get something like, you know, Q plus of QZ, Z Q minus of Z minus Z inverse, Q plus of Z, Q minus of QZ is equal to lambda. Now claim that if polynomial Q plus is equal to Z minus P1 and Q minus is equal to Z minus P2, maybe multiplied by some coefficient, then this equation literally gives you TRS Hamiltonian. Right, so it becomes, oh, there are too many Zs. So this Z is a twist here. So see what happens when I try to rush. So it's called zeta. So zeta is a twist.
Okay, I think I understand what you're saying, but is there a statement that various species of operators really sort of have to do with some particular enumerative problems, or
you like deeper, like no deeper connection from some moduli space? So, like, you know, I'm not aware of any of that.
Oh no, even before that, I mean, what is actually the statement? I mean, you said that somehow, in general, you can see there are questions about, you know, quantum K-theory of various Nikodymic weak varieties. Are those supposed to have, do those have something to do with some spaces of orbit or not? I mean, I think you didn't formalize the statement, right, in the talk.
Sir, repeat the last sentence, please.
I'm sorry?
I didn't hear the last sentence. It was cut.
Well, I mean, I said, I think it didn't formulate any statement of the following kind. I mean, in your motivation part in the beginning, you said you want to consider something like quantum K theory of various Nikodymic weak varieties.
Yeah.
Is there a statement that those have to do with au pairs? And then you have to match the parameters somehow.
So at the level that I presented, it's just it's on the level of formulae, right? So basically, one familiar space and another familiar spaces have the same set of parameters, right? So equivalent parameters correspond.
Well, that is the point that I missed. So why do they have the same space parameters?
Well,
I mean, for the Nikodymic weak varieties, it's VW. And so what are VW for opers? So this is maybe this something I missed.
Oh, W is the framing. The framing is this thing, right? So it's the polynomial that the roots of this polynomial are equivalent parameters.
And
Kähler parameters sit in a twist.
Okay. And then like a theorem that when you study quantum K theory, then the answer is formalized in terms of orbits, or is it a conjecture? What's the status of it?
I didn't make a theorem about K theory and orbits. So what I made in the beginning was just an old result that I had, with Anton and others about this thing. So at the moment, we didn't know any much about orbits. So I'm using that just as a motivation the space of orbits, they look like they generalize that thing, which I think it's interesting on its own. I think you're trying to put more kind of meat into it than I. So, if you're asking,
but secretly, I try to say that orbits are do give you some kind of an answer to some enumerative question or not? Well, you're not trying to say this.
No, I'm not trying to say that.
Sorry, Peter. Make
comment. Okay.
Yeah. So, Anton, you wanna add something? Yeah.
Yeah. So there was. I mean, the central point here is almost beta equation. They're talking about cogeneralization of these beta equations. And originally, this QQ system. This is what we were trying to do to find out realization of QQ system within enumerative geometry. But what happens is that with Q plus and Q minus operators, they correspond to basically which powers of, let's say in the case of the Grassmannian, right? It's a tautological bundle, the which powers of tautological bundle. But this is Q plus. And Q minus corresponds to which powers of the dual one.
The point is
when you deform, your K theory, right? When you consider the quantum K theory, this deformation, they correspond to different versions of stability parameters. So they basically don't live in the same space. So it's impossible to kind of realize it within.
Within the single family of quasi-maps.
Yeah. So with Q plus and Q minus, even though the relation holds in this quantum case, but you're quantizing basically different varieties. So, and then we moved on to figure out what would be another geometric construction for this QQ system, because clearly it has to have some geometric realization. And then we moved to this Q operators business. And the way how they intertwined on the level of, these algebraic relations. And there are different realizations of these beta equations using these TRS variables, using original beta variables, and those find natural realization within Oper formalism, as Peter was trying to explain using, this SL2 example. Mm-hmm. So that's...
I think the Opers versus QQ is like the generalization of quantum classical duality that we had with David some years ago.
Yes. All right. Sorry to interrupt.
No, yeah. Thanks. It was useful comment. Yeah.
And maybe I should comment, sorry, one more thing about this QQ system. So there are, of course, different versions of the QQ system, because QQ system, originally how it appeared in the early papers of Bazhanov, Lukyanov, Malochkov, and then Frenkel and Hernandez, it was related to relations in the K ring of the representations of quantum affine algebra. And the QQ system in non-simply least case, which they obtain, it's slightly different. So the distribution of the Q parameters in the right hand side, it's a little bit different. And what Peter was saying, that now Frenkel, Hernandez, Stichen, they're trying to build, you know, the basically the meaning in that representation theoretic setting, what this particular QQ system, the fixed distribution of Q parameters, what does it mean on the level of representations? So in non-simply least case, this is kind of
I think what Sasha said, it should be something like that, maybe.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you start from simple algebra, but what you get, somehow this is not Langlands dual, but it's a Langlands dual to find out.
That's maybe related to this 4DIM correspondence, and it goes very. I mean, it could probably go very far into other stories.
Okay.